.NET Content Development with David Pine.
The Azure DevOps Podcast is a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Each show brings you hard-hitting interviews with industry experts, innovating better methods, and sharing success stories. Listen on to learn how to increase quality, ship quickly, and operate well. And now your host, Jeffrey Palermo.
Welcome to the Azure DevOps Podcast. I'm Jeffrey Palermo, your host for helping you and your teams move fast, deliver quality, and to run your software with confidence in Azure, all while using everything that the .NET ecosystem has to offer. The podcast is sponsored by ClearMeasure, a software architecture company that empowers .NET teams to be self-sufficient and able to deliver world-class results. And by the way, any companies needing fractional software leadership or a fractional chief architect, go ahead and give them a call, ClearMeasure. They help in-house software development teams. And so if you want your internal team to be able to deliver top quality software, then give them a call. If you have a comment or question for the show, send me an email at podcast@palermo.network. And also, my video show is now 6 months old. So I invite you to join me on my Programming with Palermo show. Also, you can search for, quote, Programming with Palermo in any of the podcast directories. And you can also find it on www.palermo.network. My guest today on the show is David Pine. He works in developer relations at Microsoft, focusing on .NET and Azure developer content. He's recognized as a Google developer expert in web technologies and is a Twilio champion also. David focuses on the developer community, actively seeking opportunities to share knowledge through speaking engagements around the world. David advocates for open source, the .NET Foundation, C#, TypeScript, SignalR, Reactive Extensions, Azure, and .NET, and he's a founding member and co-host of the On.NET Live show, and you can follow David on Twitter at DavidPine7. So, David, welcome to the show. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for the kind introduction.
Oh, my pleasure, my pleasure. Well, you've done quite a lot. I'd like to kind of ask you about that, but before we get into it, I'd like to always ask the guest, what are the high points along your career that steered you in the direction of what you're working on now?
That's a really good question. I think when I was a consultant, this is probably like in the middle of my career, I was consulting and helping out Johnson Controls. And we were working on a very large energy optimization mechanism with some PhDs that were writing low-level algorithms to optimize the central energy consumption for campus, like at Stanford University. Mm. So that was really, really fun. Well, they would write MATLAB, which was like this very foreign concept to me. But we had schedules and we would interface with them. And I was the UI lead at the time, responsible for writing what had become a dashboard that would consume and represent the schedules and all the different variables and different parts of the campus and the energy consumption patterns and weather and campus schedule and equipment. And it was a lot of fun.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. Sounds like it. And now you've been at Microsoft for some time and you've been around the Microsoft ecosystem a while. What kind of led you towards the Microsoft stack?
Well, earlier in my career, I started with C++ and VB.NET. And I started realizing that I didn't really care much for C++. It was almost a bit too foreign coming out of college and only having, familiarity with like Java, mm-hmm. right? So it was kind of like, what is this thing? And then...
Got to have our garbage collection.
Right, exactly. And then, VB.NET was interesting. And then, that evolved into, C#. And then... started following C# and really, really enjoyed just the syntax and the beauty of, being able to write code like that. And, with the introduction of like async and await and generics and, just kind of following the language, for more than a decade as it evolved was really, really fulfilling. And I really, enjoy being close to that stack.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know the listeners can't see this, but I'm looking at a pretty amazing sound system behind you and mixer board and amp. I think so many developers are into music as well. Tell us about that.
Sure. Yeah. Well, this is all very old equipment back here. But I was the lead singer in a band for 13 years, actually multiple bands, and a songwriter. And I, before that, wrote poetry. And some of that's, believe it or not, still available online. So yeah, I've always been drawn to music. I don't really claim that I play instruments, but we do have guitars lying around the house and, you know, a drum set. And my three sons appreciate music almost as much as I do.
Nice. Yeah, there seems to be, I think it's the way our brains think. There's a very close Venn diagram of music and programming and computers and logic that just kind of fits together.
Absolutely. No, you had mentioned before Brady Gaster, and thank you publicly to Brady for the introduction here to Jeffrey. But Brady has a huge passion as well for music. So I think, you know, that's just strengthening your case for the Venn diagram.
Yeah, for sure. Well, let's jump in. You just wrote a new book on Blazor.
Yes. Oh my gosh,
tell us about that.
It's amazing that it's done. It was a very, very large effort. I do recall that early on with O'Reilly, when we were negotiating the contract, I told them that I wanted to push the start date back. At first, there were, you know, everything's a negotiation when you're working with a publisher. Mm-hmm. But in doing so, I gave myself enough time to really start kind of sinking into writing what I believe to be an app that would serve as the basis for the book. You know, I didn't want my book to be like a typical tech book that has just little snippets and pieces of almost like, you know, demo code, or I wanted it to be like a fully functioning app from beginning to end.
Yeah.
And I wanted the reader to be able to immerse themselves and kind of take on the persona of your onboarding, for example, into like a new job. Like maybe you're consulting, or maybe you're just doing a career change and you're getting into it, or maybe you're just coming out of college and you want to look at joining a team and there's an app that's established. And from that mindset, what would that experience look like? So that's kind of what the book speaks to, but it introduces all sorts of capabilities, from everything from source generators to GitHub Actions, localizing content, to native speech synthesis and recognition, to all the basic stuff as well. I mean, it's pretty wild.
Wow. All right. And so people can get it anywhere books are sold, I imagine?
Absolutely. Yep.
Awesome. And it's from O'Reilly. So we'll make sure to include a link in the show notes there.
Yeah. I'll just state the title real quick so people have that. It's called Learning Blazor: Build Single Page Apps with WebAssembly and C#.
Nice. And I'd like to know your philosophy. How many years on .NET? .NET developers are basically saying, well, I guess I need to pair it with Vue or React or Angular. And so do you believe that the age of the JavaScript SPA front end for .NET developers is over, or is this just another option? How do you think about that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I certainly do not believe that the age of JavaScript SPAs is over. I think that'd be foolish for anyone to stake that claim. To me, it's just another tool. It's another option out there. And I think it's a very viable option, especially if you have familiarity with .NET and JavaScript. I mean, then you're like a super Blazor developer. A bit more context about my consulting history. I was a solutions architect for a long time as well. And, you know, we were helping 20 different teams, and a lot of the different teams had different stacks. There was React applications. There was Angular applications. I was a big proponent of Angular because of TypeScript.
Yeah.
And as the UI lead, that's actually the app that we were building. It was backed by .NET web APIs, but the front end was Angular.
Yep.
So it's certainly not going anywhere. And, you know, with Vue, React, Angular, a lot of the other ones, Svelte, you know, all of these things are wildly popular and they're fairly intuitive, and they're arguably feature complete. And they have a lot of the you know, best practices that you would expect out of like a modern tech stack. So like dependency injection, you know, and helping the developer be able to test things and all of these different things, you know, so it's, I don't think they're going anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. So on day to day, what Microsoft product do you find yourself working on the most lately?
Well, so I work officially for the .NET team and I help write. So like we're talking like primary responsibility. Mm-hmm. My official title, which I'm not super excited by, they recently changed it, is technical writer. It used to be content developer. And I believed that content developer was more appropriate because, you know, I'm not just writing docs. Of course, we write conceptual content. We write blog posts. We write how-tos and quick starts and tutorials. But we also write sample code. Mm-hmm. We're actually interacting with the product. There's several of us that are actually actively involved in the direction of the product. We help contribute to it. We propose features. We actually write codes. I've written code that's in, you know, .NET runtime. Mm-hmm. You know, we help influence the templates. We help interface with customers since it's all open source. So as you can imagine, there's always an influx of issues being reported or pull requests that we're reviewing. In addition to that, I like to focus on the developer community. And as a co-host of the show, that's kind of part of this technical writer hat, right?
Yep.
So we've got a show and the show is really fun. So on .NET Live, we celebrate all these diversified thoughts and ideas from guests that we bring on that are representing the .NET developer community around the world. And it's amazing. We get to interact and kind of show off some of the stuff that they're working on. And it's really exciting.
Yeah, I've talked to quite a few people from just the various docs teams. And you guys are coding all day long because you have to have something to write about.
And, exactly. And
I can imagine each product has a program manager, but then there's almost like a program management committee. I was like, okay, we were the first users of this and it's screwed up in this area. Come on, let's fix it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, there's definitely a lot of that. But even beyond that, we have a whole suite of tools that we're writing internally for ourselves to help optimize ourselves out of a job, so to speak. So we've been doing a lot of work recently with GitHub Actions. Mm-hmm. And what we've been trying to do is, it's very, very much multifaceted, but we're interfacing with Dependabot. We're taking on, like I wrote a version sweeper for .NET. Mm-hmm. So as you can imagine, in .NET samples, we have literally, I think it's nearly 2,000 .NET sample projects. And of those, you know, we have to verify first that they build. So we've got custom build GitHub Actions. But as those different versions start to kind of, you know, fall out of support, how do you monitor that, right? That's a big problem. So I wrote the version sweeper, and what it does is it's a GitHub action that wakes up every single month and it evaluates all the different projects in a given repository and sees what their target framework moniker is. Mm-hmm. And then it evaluates the current state of the different versions that are available in .NET. And then from that, it determines whether or not it needs to create issues for us to track efforts for upgrading things that might have fallen out of support. And it's available in the GitHub Action Marketplace, so anyone can use it. So it's really fascinating.
You know, that is a huge problem. There's been tons of commercial and open source libraries that have samples in the Git repository, and I've gone and pulled the samples, like, oh great, NuGet restore and everything, and then it won't even compile.
Exactly. Exactly. So. You could hypothetically consume this, you know, write a workflow in your repository and consume the version sweeper. And if you want it to run as a cron job, it's, you know, simple. And then it will actually create issues and say, oh, just so you know, Jeffrey, these samples are, it'll actually point to like the individual line within the CS proj or even Docker file, right? Yeah. So it's well aware of all those different things.
Many thanks to our podcast sponsor, Clear Measure. Clear Measure is a software architecture company that empowers clients' development teams to be self-sufficient. moving fast, delivering quality, and running their systems with confidence. Whether starting a new project or developing new technologies or techniques, Clear Measures sets up your team to deliver world-class results. Learn more at www.clearmeasure.com. Clear Measure, empowering software delivery. Clear Measure is also happy to be a sponsor of the video podcast, Programming with Palermo. Watch, learn, and program alongside Chief Architect Jeffrey Palermo. Videos are added weekly and available on syndicated locations supporting video podcast or by visiting palermo.network. Tune in today.
Well, then you guys probably have a unique problem just with the 2,000 samples and growing. You've got tons of .NET 6 samples, and I imagine for a lot of them, it would be, for any one of them, a pretty easy upgrade to .NET 7, but the sheer number of them, is there an automated tool to say, hey, upgrade this .NET 6 solution to .NET 7, or is it still, no, go into each of the CSproj files by hand?
Yeah, that's a really good question, too. So as of right now, the version sweeper, there is an official plan on the backlog. It's just finding time to work on that sort of thing. Instead of creating an issue, there's a modality that we would like to introduce, which is to create a pull request instead, and perhaps leverage like a global tool such as Upgrade Assistant, and say automatically apply, you know, silently an upgrade to this from, you know, and because it's Upgrade Assistant's really, really powerful, especially from the CLI. One of the problems is it's highly interactive, so you have to be there and kind of babysit it. Where it would be nice if there was just like a globally accepted, you know, nod of approval set of defaults that could be applied. And from that, you could just say, you know, go give me a pull request, and then it's my job to look at it. Right.
Sure.
So, but that's something that we're talking about and we have a real need for.
Right. Whether it's the samples or just other applications, you've done work with Playwright as well. A lot of people don't even know what that is yet if they haven't been paying close attention. How far have you seen it taken so far?
Well, I always enjoy automated tests of any nature, but Playwright is super special. I used to use Selenium in the past, and Selenium was good. I believe, though, Playwright has certainly passed it. It allows you to basically automate tests that are end-to-end. So imagine you've got a website that displays some sort of data and exposes some sort of user functionality. You can actually have Playwright run and go to that website and log in and, you know, interact with the user interface. And then you can verify all of that stuff, all of that functionality is, you know, working. And that's super, super powerful. And you can do it from different browsers too. So you can run all this in parallel. You can run it headless. But Playwright for .NET is my specific flavor of stuff that I've been exposed to. And actually, the book Learning Blazor's got a chapter dedicated to that. And it's, since the app is actually localized in multiple languages, I've got a test that runs that will change the locale and log in and ensure that the correct, you know, expected translated strings are displayed, right? So it's really, really powerful.
Now, with Playwright, you can author the tests in a variety of languages. What's your favorite for authoring the Playwright tests?
Yeah, that's the .NET. I think they've got, you know, obviously JavaScript, so probably TypeScript, but I've just been using the .NET SDK for authoring mine.
Awesome. I think from a public perspective, or at least maybe my perception, just looking at the docs for Playwright, the C# samples aren't the ones that immediately come to the forefront first. And so from, you know, from Microsoft and from .NET development perspective, the question is, should we be using this over here? And as opposed to, it's like, no, if you're using C#, use C#.
Right. So, well, if you think about it, Playwright, it's an end-to-end testing framework for web apps. So when you think web apps, you know, historically, it's always been just JavaScript.
Yeah.
So it makes sense for it to lean on JavaScript. But they also have, I'm looking right now, they've got SDKs for, so it's called Node.js, obviously, Python, Java, and .NET.
Okay. Now, one of the problems with Selenium, because it's been around for so long, is it was built for the request response style of the web, and it does it really well. How did you find Playwright handling Blazor WebAssembly? Any issues there, or did it
issues whatsoever. It's all just a web app at the end of the day. So it's, you know, whether or not it's WebAssembly or not, it's, that's kind of transparent or probably opaque to the author of the test. Mm-hmm. Right. So, I mean, as long as, there's different modalities too, such that you could, have Playwright actually start up your web server, and then, you know, run the app that way. You just point to a URL and start interacting with it. And then, you know, from that lens, it doesn't matter if it's, .NET, Java, Python, Node.js, whatever SDK you're using, mm-hmm. It's just a web app that you're executing at the end. Right. So.
And from a guidance perspective, what is your favorite locator style? Do you like the CSS locators, XPath, IDs? What's your philosophy on that?
Boy, I don't think anyone's ever asked me that. So that's a kudos for that. I tend to lean towards IDs because, mm-hmm. you know, they're globally unique to the DOM, or they should be. I'm going to go with the generic answer. It depends, right? It depends on what you're trying to achieve. But I found for the most part, if you have an ID on an element and, you know, that's what it should be, it's really easy to interact with just that ID.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So back to kind of the new things from Microsoft, Orleans is kind of one of the, I would say, newer things. It's kind of increasing in awareness. Right. I did talk to kind of Brady about Orleans. From the doc side, is that something that's expanding quickly, or what level of maturity would you say it is from just a documentation and us understanding, okay, this is really how it should be used and how it will fall into place nicely?
Yeah, that's a good question. So Orleans is ever evolving. There's a lot of investments in it. I'm proud to say that just recently, within the last year or so here, we've onboarded all of the existing Orleans content into the official Microsoft.com, you know, .NET Orleans content. So we're reworking a lot of it right now, and there's plans to update things, especially with the recent, you know, release of .NET 7 and Orleans 7. So that's some big news. So, you know, before, you know, Orleans was kind of, it appeared as though it wasn't really like an official, you know, supported project. And mm-hmm. it was kind of off to the side. It had its own docs. And even though it was under, you know, .NET, the org, it just kind of felt disconnected. So bringing in Orleans into the official doc set is helping, you know, make that message clear. In addition to that, we've got learn modules that we've also built for it. Mm-hmm. And all of the Orleans samples that had existed inside the repo itself, we pulled over into the code samples browser experience. So there's, you know, a number of fully functioning samples that are available to check out. So it's getting a lot better, and it's only going to improve from here.
I think the normal developer, it can be sometimes hard to keep all these concepts straight with the actor model as a pattern. And then for a long time, you know, Akka.net was this kind of the one that most people heard of. And then we think, okay, distributed computing. Well, I heard that with Azure Container Apps. Well, wait a minute. I look at Azure Container Apps in Azure, and it kind of has Dapper built right in. Well, is it either Orleans or Dapper? Or how do you reason in your mind how these various things fit together and how it's going to run in Azure when you're using them?
Yeah, that's a good question too. There is, it's a lot to unpack. And, you know, the actor model specifically, it's been around since the early 70s. So Orleans is a little bit unique in that it's got like a virtual actor model. So it's a bit different. So actors exist perpetually, mm-hmm. Which is kind of neat. So Orleans I'm not as familiar with Akka.net. I actually had Aaron on our show before, and he's went through and showed a bunch of stuff. And there was a bunch of questions about people, you know, a lot of our live viewers were asking similar questions like, well, so what, how does this compare to Orleans? Or, mm-hmm. you know, what about Dapper? And, you know, which spelling of Dapper are you referring to? Because, right. you know, so as developers, right. So as developers, we seem to kind of back ourselves into corners by having so many different ways to do very similar things. So it all comes down to opinions, you know, weighing pros and cons and things like that. So Orleans definitely has a place when it comes to, like, you know, cloud native and distributed. I like to think of any time I'm trying to do distributed.net, I want to use Orleans because it's so intuitive. There's a lot of really comprehensive defaults out of the gate. I think it's almost magical having two disparate processes on different machines running and being able to just communicate seamlessly. Mm-hmm. It's almost like you don't even have to think about it.
Yeah. Now, the Orleans concept of the grain or the actor in production, if until the point in time where you really need to scale up for greater throughput and processing, would your default just be putting all those grains kind of in the same process, running in either Azure App Service or Azure Container App, just have it all run together as opposed to distributed processing?
Yeah. So, I mean, that you're kind of talking about like grain silo, you know, isolation and clustering and things like that. So yeah, when you're developing a grain, you know, those implementations of the grain interfaces will live on in a silo, and that silo can be, you know, there's lots of different ways to think about it, and there's lots of different hosting options. So it's very, very involved. So this is probably a great segue to say you should reach out to Ruben Bond next. He's the principal engineer on Orleans, but Ruben is amazing. I work with him, and he is obviously very, very close to Orleans since he's actively been developing it mm-hmm. for years and years now. But he would be able to speak to a lot of those, you know, addressing a lot of those different kind of questions like that.
Okay. So when you do your docs, what do you find yourself writing the most about besides your Blazor book?
Yeah.
what are the new samples that are kind of going to be hot off the press pretty soon?
Well, there has been a lot of recent work on Orleans stuff specifically, but I do write for the fundamentals content. So in the .NET docs, anything that's Microsoft.extensions, from a namespace perspective, mm-hmm. I'm writing all that stuff. So there's a whole suite of fundamentals content out there. It's underneath runtime libraries. So there's like dependency injection, configuration, logging, like the hosting model, file globbing, globalization, worker services, caching, channels, networking, you know, like the pure .NET HTTP stuff, sockets, TCP, whatever, all that stuff. That's kind of, I own that content for the docs team in .NET.
Okay. So that's off of learn.microsoft.com /.NET/core extensions?
It would be learn.microsoft.com/.NET/fundamentals.
Okay. We'll make sure to include the link in the show notes. Does that include the C# language as well?
No, that's Bill Wagner on our team. He owns the C# content.
Yeah. Bill's a good guy. I've known him for years.
Awesome. Yeah.
Well, what's next for you besides just, you know, the day-to-day work? And is there anything exciting coming up that you're looking forward to?
Yeah. So I'm a huge proponent of GitHub Actions, and I want to make that story for .NET easier. So mm-hmm. as of right now, GitHub, they support creators of GitHub Actions, writing them either as composites, which are kind of less utilized, JavaScript, obviously, mm-hmm. But then as a Docker file. So that means if we can containerize .NET apps, we can write .NET GitHub Actions. And mm-hmm. I've written several of those. So I'm writing an SDK, which is emulating what already exists from GitHub, their Actions toolkit. So they've got like packages for actions /core. Mm-hmm. And that's some of their common, you know, input and output and how do you speak to a workflow, from the context of your app. So yeah. I just wrote that and published it last week.
Oh,
so
nice.
I'm adding on to that too. So I'm adding like the GitHub one, the core is already there. And then I'm working on the glob. They've got a globbing library as well. So that's just simply, file system globbing that already exists in .NET, which a lot of people aren't familiar with, but it's a primitive that exists, and you can do file globbing with .NET natively, which is sweet.
Well, would you define glob? I can hear the listeners, what the heck is globbing?
Yeah, so a glob is a term used to define patterns for matching file and directory names based on wildcards.
So grep for the directory system.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, great. Well, hey, as we come to our time here, I appreciate you coming on the show and sharing what you've been working on and of course, celebrating your new Blazor book. And we invite all the listeners to go check it out.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Jeff.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. And until next time, keep shipping.
You've been listening to the Azure DevOps Podcast, a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Go to www.azuredevops.show for show notes and other episodes. On behalf of your host, Jeffrey Palermo, and our sponsors, thanks for listening, and may God bless you.